Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to pull out the key ideas from complex sources, basically to get you well-informed fast.
Exactly. If you're curious, want to learn, but maybe don't want to get totally bogged down in jargon, this is for you.
Today, we're tackling a paper, a 2004 one from the Annals of Probability.
Mm-hmm.
The title's a bit of a beast. Transportation Cost Information Inequalities and Applications to Random Dynamical Systems and Diffusions.
Yeah, okay, that definitely sounds academic. Lots of math terms in there for sure.
It does. But we promised to unpack it. Because the core idea is actually pretty fascinating. It's about this fundamental link between, well, the cost of moving probability distributions around.
And how different those distributions are in terms of information.
Right. So our mission today is to make that connection clear, maybe spark a little aha moment about why this abstract math actually matters.
We want to explore how that cost, how much effort it takes to change one probability picture into another, tells us something deep about the information separating them.
Okay. Transportation cost information inequalities. Where do I start making sense of that?
Let's begin with the basics. First concept, metric space. Simply put, it's just any space where you can measure the distance between points.
Like a map, measuring distance between cities.
Exactly like that. A system for knowing how far apart things are.
Okay, got it. Metric space. What about probability measures?
So a probability measure lives on that space, and it tells you how likely different outcomes or different points in that space are.
Like heads or tails on a coin flip, it assigns the chances.
Precisely. It distributes the likelihood across the space.
Right. Now, LP Bosserstein distance, WPD. That one sounds intense.
It does sound technical, WPD, too.
Good.
But the intuition is pretty graspable. Think about the cost of moving one pile of sand representing one probability distribution, they say, to make it look exactly like a second pile of sand distribution.
Ah, okay. So it's not just that the piles look different, but the actual work involved in rearranging the first to match the second.
Exactly. It's the minimal transportation cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that P in LP, it just tells you how you're calculating that cost. Like, are you more sensitive to long distances or short ones?
Okay.
And interestingly, the paper notes, if you use a very simple metric like distance is one if two things are different, zero if they're the same, a sort of trivial distance.
Yeah.
Then this fancy Wasserstein distance just becomes the total variation distance, which is a really standard way to measure the overall difference between two probability measures.
Huh. That's neat. So it connects back to something more fundamental. Okay. What about Kullback information or relative entropy? Sounds like information theory.
You got it.
Right.
It measures how different two distributions and on are from an information viewpoint.
Wow.
You can think of it as how much information you lose if you use as an approximation for the true distribution.
So if they're similar, not much info lost. If they're very different, lots lost.
Exactly. High value means very distinguishable. Low value means very similar.
Okay, so we have the cost of moving, Wasserstein, and the information difference, Kullback. The inequality, then, is the bridge, WPD to CH.
That's the heart of it. This LP transportation cost information inequality puts a mathematical relationship between them. It says the transportation cost is bounded. It's no more than some constant C times the information difference.
And that notation and TPC.
That just means the measure is nice enough to satisfy this inequality for a specific P and a specific constant C.
It's like saying more information difference means potentially more reshaping effort, and C is kind of the exchange rate between information and effort.
That's a really good way to put it. And the paper really zooms in on two specific cases, P1 and P2.
Okay, why those two? What's special about P1 and P2?
Well, the T1C case, P1, it turns out it's deeply linked to something called measure concentration.
Measure concentration.
Yeah, it's this phenomenon where probability measures, especially in high dimensions, tend to be highly concentrated around some central set, like their average value. Think of data points clumping together.
Okay, so T1 tells us about how clumped or spread out a distribution is.
Kinda, yeah. It quantifies that concentration. Big names like Martin, Talgrand, Ledoux worked a lot on this, showing how T1C captures this concentration.
Interesting. And T2C, the P2 case.
T2C is also huge. Mm-hmm. Talgrand first showed it holds for Gaussian measures, you know, the standard bell curves. And this inequality is connected to other really important ones, like log Sobolev and Poincaré inequalities.
Which have applications in what areas?
Oh, all sorts. Statistical mechanics, understanding algorithms and machine learning, even things like Hamilton-Jacobi equations in physics, which Otto and Vellani explored. It's part of a whole web of powerful mathematical tools.
Oh, so T2 is like a gateway to all these other important concepts.
It really is. And a lot of research at the Paper Notes has been about finding links between TPC and these other functional inequalities.
But this paper does something different.
Yeah, they kind of flip the script. Instead of deriving TPC from other inequalities, they want to establish it directly in certain situations without relying on those known connections, sort of building it from the ground up for specific cases.
Which leads them to ask them questions.
Exactly. And the first one is about something called a Gaussian tail condition.
Gaussian tail? Does that mean it looks like a bell curve far away from the center?
Sort of. It means the probability of finding a value very far from the average drops off really quickly, at least as fast as it would for a true Gaussian distribution. So extreme outliers are very rare.
Okay. And the question is?
Is just having that fast decaying tail, that Gaussian tail property, enough on its own to guarantee the inequality holds for P1? Does it guarantee it's in T1C?
If extremes are unlikely, does that automatically give you this cost-information relationship?
That's the question. Yeah. They point to a theorem by Bobkoff and Gutset, Theorem 1.1, which gives a characterization of T1C. It links it to how well certain functions behave, specifically Lipschitz functions, functions that don't change too rapidly.
So the inequality is related to the properties of functions on that probability space.
Right. And they mention the classic Pinsker-Cesar inequality as a sort of basic example of T1C, but for that simple, trivial distance we talked about earlier.
The one where things are just same or different.
Yeah. It connects the total variation distance to the relative entropy. It's like a baby version showing the principle.
Okay.
The paper then shows that T1C does imply you have this Gaussian tail behavior.
Yeah.
But the big answer to their question comes in Theorem 2.3.
Does the Gaussian tail guarantee T1C?
Yes. Theorem 2.3, also by Bobkoff and Gutset, says it is sufficient. If you have that exponential decay in the tails, you get the T1C inequality. They even give a way to estimate the constant C based on how fast the tails decay.
That feels like a solid result, a clear link between tail behavior and this cost information property for P1.
It is significant. But then Remark 2.4 adds a bit of nuance. It points out that a simple coin flip measure, Bernoulli, satisfies T1C with that trivial distance. But it doesn't satisfy TPC for any P greater than 1. So key 1 is special in that sense.
Ah, so just because it works for P1 doesn't mean it works for P2 too or higher.
Exactly. And they also give an example of a measure that's split into two separate parts. It satisfies T1C, but it doesn't satisfy the Poincaré inequality, which is related to T2C.
So T1 and T2 capture different things. One doesn't necessarily imply the other.
That's a key takeaway. They're distinct properties.
Okay. So that's question one handled. What's the second question about? It mentions dependent sequences.
Right. Question two shifts focus. What happens when your data isn't independent? Think of a sequence where each step depends on the one before it, like a Markov chain where the next state only depends on the current state.
Okay, like weather patterns maybe, or stock prices.
Could be models for things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
The question is, if each individual step or transition somehow satisfies a TPC inequality, does the entire sequence, the whole path considered together, also satisfy a similar inequality?
And for independent data points, we know the answer.
For independent sequences, yes. Generally, the property does carry over, it tensorizes. But dependence, that memory between steps, makes it much harder.
I can imagine.
They mentioned Martin did work on this for the Pinsker inequality, which is like T1 with a trivial distance, for certain contracting Markov chains using techniques called couplings.
Couplings. That's where you cleverly link two random processes to compare them.
Exactly. But the paper argues that the trivial distance Martin used isn't really natural for many systems we care about, like random dynamical systems or diffusions, which evolve in spaces with richer geometry.
So they need to tackle this for the proper Wasserstein distances.
Right. That's the motivation for question two. And they note that for T2C, this kind of Markovian tensorization hasn't been explored nearly as much.
So how do these cost information bounds behave with dependent data and these more natural distances?
Okay. This brings us to Theorem 2.5. It provides a condition labeled C1, under which the joint distribution of the whole dependent sequence does satisfy an LP transportation cost information inequality, at least for P between 1 and 2.
And what is this condition, C1, roughly?
It's basically a contraction condition on the conditional probabilities. It means that the influence of the past state on the next state has to weaken in a specific way measured by the Wasserstein distance. The dependence can't be too strong.
So if the memory fades fast enough, the whole sequence inherits the good property.
That's the intuition. The proof uses coupling again and induction. And from this theorem, they get corollary 2.6.
What's that?
It's a version of the Hoofding inequality, which bounds how far averages can stray from their expectation. But now it works for functions of the whole dependent sequence, specifically for P1. That's pretty useful.
Definitely sounds useful for analyzing real data that often has dependencies.
Absolutely. And remark 2.7 adds context. It says the starting assumption that each step satisfies TPC individually often holds in practice. And this condition, C1, signifies weak dependence. They link it back to Martin's condition, too.
Feels like the pieces are connecting nicely.
Yeah. Then remarks 2.8 and 2.9 discuss some finer points, like how the constant C might grow with the sequence length for T1, but maybe stay bounded for T2 in some cases, which is often desirable.
Okay. Then they offer yet another way to look at T1C for dependent sequences. Proposition 2.0 and theorem 2.11.
Right. It's an alternative approach.
Yeah.
This one uses ideas from martingales, drawing on work by McDiarmid and Rio. Theorem 2.1 gives a different condition called C1.
How is C1 different from C1?
C1 was sort of backward-looking. How much does the past influence the present? Condition C1 is more forward-looking. It's about how much the present state influences the distribution of states far off in the future.
Okay. Two different ways to quantify the fading memory or influence.
Exactly. And remark 2.13 points out that this forward-looking condition, C1, can sometimes be weaker or easier to satisfy than the backward-looking one, C1, especially for systems like ergodic Markov chains that eventually forget their starting point.
Interesting. So multiple tools now to handle dependence. And all this work on dependent sequences was motivated by random dynamical systems and diffusions.
Yes, that was a key driver. The later sections of the paper, sections 3 and 4, actually apply these theoretical results to those areas.
They show how the inequalities work in practice for these complex systems.
Exactly. They demonstrate how you can use these transportation cost information inequalities to analyze the behavior, like stability and long-term properties, of systems that evolve randomly over time.
It's really cool to see the payoff how these abstract inequalities become tools for understanding concrete dynamic systems.
It really is. It shows the power of developing this kind of theoretical machinery.
Okay, so let's try to sum up this deep dive. We started with the basics, metric spaces, probability measures.
Right, then the core ideas. Wasserstein distance as a cost to move probability.
And Kolbeck information as an information difference.
And the inequality linking them, WASU-TA 2CH. We saw P1 connects to concentration, P2 to log Sobolev, Poincaré, and other big results.
We tackled question 1. Yes, Gaussian tails are enough for T1C.
Then question 2. Extending this to dependent sequences, which is crucial for applications, we got conditions like C1, the backward contraction.
And C1, the forward-looking martingale condition, both allowing us to get inequalities for the whole sequence.
And finally, we touched on how this all feeds into analyzing things like random dynamical systems and diffusions.
It really paints a picture of how mathematicians build these tools to understand the relationship between, well, geometry, the cost of moving, and information.
Precisely. And showing it works even when data points aren't independent is a big step.
It definitely makes you think about where else these ideas of cost and information might show up, maybe in fields we haven't even considered.
For sure. Hopefully this gives you, our listener, a good starting point if you want to explore probability, information theory, or stochastic processes further. These concepts pop up everywhere.
Well, thanks for joining us on this pretty mathematical deep dive. We hope it was insightful.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed it.
Until next time, keep digging deeper.